Hey, it's me, Gavin Crawford. Every week, I'll quiz comedians about the headlines. Do you worry about kids being exposed to drag?
I grew up going to see men in dresses singing every Sunday and we had to give them money, okay? I wish they were singing show tunes and had some makeup and their hair done, right? It would have been way better.
If the news has you screaming into the void, we can help with that. Because News is available on CBC Listen and everywhere you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Man, I love weeks like this. You have a new Spider-Man movie out this week. It is a sequel for Into the Spider-Verse. You have American Born Chinese. That's a TV show that critics are really excited about. And a new trailer to the Barbie movie? Today on the show, there is so much to talk about. It's time for the group chat to weigh in. I'm Elamin Abdul-Mahmoud. This is Commotion. Okay, I think it's safe to say at this point that we are officially in the swing of things when it comes to blockbuster season. You had Fast X a couple of weeks ago. You had Little Mermaid last week. But the one I'm really excited about is this week because I'm excited for Spider-Man. Okay, you might remember in 2018, this animated movie called Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse came out. And what was amazing about Into the Spider-Verse is that it just immediately was a hit. Like, audiences loved it. Critics called it the best Spider-Man movie to date, which, you know what? I kind of agree with them. Today, the sequel for that comes out. It's called Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
My name is Miles Morales. I'm Brooklyn's one and only Spider-Man. And things are going great.
So wait a minute. There's an elite crew with all the best spider people in it?
Who's the new guy?
I'll take it from here.
A clip from the trailer for Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. John Mulaney's voice always makes me laugh. It was just kind of snuck in there. I've got some brilliant culture critics around the Commotion table ready to talk about it. And also some of the other big stories this week. Jackson Weaver, Cassie Cow, Nico Stratus, all here with me in the Commotion studio. What's good, everybody? How's it going?
Hi, good morning.
Hello. Wow. What I love about this is like my energy is like a 12 and you guys are like, yeah, this is fine, man. You know?
Combined, we're a 3. Yes. Yeah, we're getting there.
This is off to a great start. I love this for us.
Hello and good morning to you.
Thank you. Jackson, can I just ask you, does anyone ever call you Jackie Weaver? Like after the legendary actress Jackie Weaver?
I was
Weaver?
Action Jackson to my family. Ooh. When I was a little kid.
Buddy, so, you're Action Jackson to me, okay? Okay, so the Spider-Verse movies are about a different Spider-Man than the thing that we're used to, right? It's not Peter Parker. It's not the quippy, sarcastic, white teenager guy. Miles Morales is Spider-Man here. Miles is black and Puerto Rican. He's a New Yorker. He's living in a parallel universe to the Peter Parker Spider-Man situation. Nico, what is Miles up to in this movie?
You know, when we see him, when we're reinvited into Miles Morales' world, I will say, he has been Spider-Man for a minute now after the events of the first movie. And he's sort of like, you know, he's like, he knows himself a little bit better now. He's a bit more cocky. He's a bit more self-assured. And he's like, he's the Spider-Man in Brooklyn and he lives in Brooklyn. And you really get this sense of like his life. But he's also a 15-year-old kid. And anybody that's ever been a 15-year-old kid will know like that's a weird time in your life. And you sort of see this in him too, right? He's in school and he's got issues with his parents and he's like, he's hiding who he is from a lot of people. And there's that sort of stress. And, you know, so he's sort of in this interesting place of like being Spider-Man, who is like this pillar of like of strength and virtuousness, and also being a teenager who is like screwing up a lot. And so he's in this place. And then, you know, there's the broader Spider-Verse that sort of gets introduced that he knows of because of the first movie, but now it's a bigger thing than even he was ever aware of. And he's sort of figuring out his place in the world in a lot of different ways.
Jackson, we've had 3 different live action Spider-Men, you know. My hashtag my Spider-Man is Tobey Maguire, you know, with the upside down kiss and everything. But then there's also Andrew Garfield, who did, I think, an incredible job. And then you get Tom Holland, who's the current reigning Spider-Man. When we look at an animated Spider-Man, how does that stack up against the live-action movies?
I mean, we have those 3 main live-action Spider-Man. We also have, you know, we have Mexican Spider-Man. We have a lot of animated Spider-Man. We have 60 Spider-Man. But like in terms of stacking up, I would say, you said like critics said the first one was the best Spider-Man movie out there. This, in my opinion, it's the best Spider-Man franchise of all time. And I can say all time because we've been doing it for many, many decades.
A gasp heard around the room.
A gasp. And yeah. Like the first one was, you know, it had that crown being the best Spider-Man movie. Yeah. I think this second one cements it as like, this is the best way that the Spider-Man story has ever been told. And like, it's hard to kind of talk about this without doing too many spoilers because so many of it is like reveals.
Yeah.
This one gets very meta about what that story really is, and by kind of breaking it down, commenting on it, subverting it, it does those story beats that we all know and we're kind of bored of better than anyone's done it before.
Hey, you're making me want to stop the show right now to go find a theater near me to go watch.
Do
this
it. Let's get out of here.
Cassie, you saw Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. What's your vibe on this movie?
Okay, so I don't want to be the most blasphemous panelist here.
Ooh,
but
no. A dissenting voice. Go off.
No, okay. Yeah. I did like it. I will say, in general, I am very apathetic to the superhero genre.
Okay.
That's not really my bag. I did see the first one, fully forgot what it was about. I know everybody loves this movie. I will say it was good. I mean, I'm not going to be the one to tell you it's the best movie I've ever seen, but it was good. I did think going into that movie, it's 2 hours and 20 minutes, and I was really bracing myself for it. But it flew by. There's so much happening visually in that movie. It's stunning and beautiful, and the colors and the animation styles. And I just think, compared to any live-action movie, there's so much information hitting your eyeballs that you are just processing through that whole thing. It flew by. I didn't even have to pee during the movie.
Wow.
Yeah.
Honestly, that's a high compliment. Yeah. Nico, what about you? Did you like it?
Yeah, I didn't have to pee either. I mean, it's so beautiful. It's like, it is like, when I think about a comic book and a movie, you know, like the MCU of it all has kind of ruined that appeal to me because it's so like, it's so slick. It's such a veneer of a movie, right?
And we've done like 40 Marvel movies at this point.
Yeah,
like,
and it's exhausting. Yeah, like 35. But you look at this and it feels tactile in a way, right? Like it feels like reading a comic does. Mm-hmm. To me, it's like I've been a comics reader since I was a kid. And like when I watch this, I'm like, oh, I'm in this. I'm part of this. And like I was getting emotional watching it. And it just like the vibe changes as they move through universes and the art style changes and everything is just like it's kinetic and tactile in this way that like nobody else has managed to pull off. The music is great, like the sound design is fantastic, and there's all these little things in there that you could pick out. Like it's such a piece of work.
I think it does the best use of using visual storytelling
that I feel
like a lot of movies sometimes forget about all the tricks you can actually use with framing and just actually showing you what the story is rather than telling.
It's a movie as a piece of art as opposed to a movie to sell product, which is so different, right?
There's a couple scenes that like I really wanted to print it off and like hang it up on my wall when they're sitting on the bank building.
I want
that on my wall.
This is the most – I love that there was no reservation about recommending this movie. Right? Even Cassie was like, look, I don't watch a lot of superhero movies, but I'm all in on this. Jackson, I got to ask you, something that I really loved about the first one, right, is that like, yes, we have this animated story about a black kid becoming Spider-Man, but it didn't feel like it was like, hey – we're getting a black Spider-Man. Like, it didn't do the sort of, hey, this is a diversity movie kind of thing. What do you make of this franchise's approach to it with the second movie?
I mean, it's grown up. I actually recently watched a movie that's coming out in Canada next week. It's out in the States right now called Past Lives, which is about a...
Celine Song's movie.
Yeah. I got to talk to her about it. Yeah. And she was saying how that this kind of talks about the immigrant experience, but it's not, you know, trying to do a panoply or overarching general view of this is how everyone feels. It's just kind of there. That's just who she is. That's kind of, I think, what we get in Spider-Verse. We're like, it's not about, you know, growing up being black representation in terms of like hitting on the head with it, but it has to exist because we're talking about a character's experience and that is his experience. And like outside of that, I think one of the actual coolest things that this movie does is when we're talking about superhero movies, it's the hero's arc, it's the hero's journey, you know, and that really echoes what teenagers feel like as they're growing up. And when we get those, we always get a young character rebelling against his parents or without parents. He's either orphaned, it has no parents, or he's trying to like fight against the control his parents have on him. And you always get to like believe in the kids coming of age independence. This does a really surprisingly good job of making you identify with the parent struggle. Like I'm old, but like I think if I was a teenager even watching this, I'd be like, dang, like it's hard being a parent, which is hard to do.
Jackson, if you're old, I'm retired, my guy. I don't know what you mean by saying you're old. I will not stand for it. But I take your point. Cassie, I got to say, earlier this week, Amy Pascal, who's one of the producers of the Spider-Verse franchise, she announced that there's going to be a live-action version mm-hmm. of these movies mm-hmm. in development. I think part of the thing that makes Spider-Verse special is that it is this kind of fascinating, random... Like, I've never seen this kind of animation style before. Mm-hmm. Do you think a live-action version of this would hold your attention?
Oh.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I don't personally think so. Because I think, okay, to be fair, I think a lot of the charm of this movie is yeah. that it's animation. And as a writer, I think animation as a medium is so much more script forward. Yeah. I think when you're a writer, you write for live action, you are by nature limited to the ability of your actors and like physics and budgets.
Sure.
Whereas animation, you write to your heart's content and the animators figure out how to make it happen for you.
Yeah.
And so you do see, even in that last live-action Tom Holland Spider-Man movie, they also did multiverse stuff, but it was still very localized to uh-huh. what really could be seen on a screen.
Yeah.
Whereas this, the way that they made the multiverse happen, it's so immersive. The amount of detail and like cute jokes and stuff that they could just punch in there was yeah. It, limitless, because mm-hmm. they just can animate to what you're doing. Yeah. So I just think the script quality of these kinds of movies are just, you can't replicate something like that in live action.
Nika, how do you feel about this?
I mean, it's like giving someone strawberry ice cream and then saying, if you really like that, we have vanilla. And we can give you so much of it.
But there's something about the respectability of animated movies, right? And
whoa.
and there's like, it's a validation to go live action. Uh-huh.
And they've always been sort of treated as this like lesser form of art. But they're yeah. adapting comic books already. They're adapting visual storytelling mm-hmm. as a comic book. And yeah. to turn it into live action does, you know, you do sort of lose a little bit of that flavor. And I do think it will be lessened. Like, I don't need, when I was watching this, I don't need to know what this looks like in real life. Mm-hmm. I know what this looks like here, and this is enough. They're telling the story they want and need to tell in yeah. this medium, and I think it would lose something in that translation.
Uh-huh. Where are you at on this, Jackson?
I mean, you were mentioning No Way Home. I was underwhelmed by the introduction.
That's Spider-Man No Way Home. That's the last
yeah.
one.
Yeah, the last out. One. We had that multiversal thing. I was underwhelmed by their introduction scenes of like, oh, look, this cameo. This one is shot after shot. Oh, my God. It's this guy. It's that guy. It's that yeah. guy. I don't want to say too much. We got Alphonso Davies in there, which is pretty cool.
Canadian soccer icon, yeah. Alphonso
he is a little, Davies. He's one of the Spider-Men. He's 60 Spider-Men.
What?
You get to see him swinging
That's
swinging in.
That's my favorite spoiler ever.
It's been yeah. in headlines. I'm not ruined too much.
Yeah.
But this, and I 100% agree that animated movies get less respect. I mean, doing reviews, we were just talking about Little Mermaid. It was just a slightly worse version of the original. We had Peter Pan and Wendy before that. We always get these animated movies turned into live action, and when we do get new animated movies, we get live action actors taking over the big roles.
Yeah.
There should be more respect for. I want to see a live action adapted as an animated movie. I want to see the reverse. Yeah. That's what I want.
100%.
I love that energy. I'm going to pass that on. Okay, we'll have to wait and see. Meanwhile, take a listen to this.
Is there a Jim Wang here?
Wang.
This is Wayne Chung.
Wei Chen.
He's a new student and he's Chinese, like you. He's going to tag along to all of your classes, except math. He's way ahead of you in math.
What's going on?
I'm not from this world. I need your help with my quest to stop the uprising.
So freaking unbelievable.
So that's from the new Disney Plus series. It's called American Born Chinese. It is a fantastical coming-of-age comedy. It's adapted from a graphic novel in 2006. Jackson, you caught a bit of the show so far. How's it holding up?
I mean, when you look at Disney Plus's original stuff oriented at, you know, young people, because there's a lot of stuff for adults that's really good. But yeah. I think this is kind of the most grown up YA thing that they've done. It's like gotten a lot of respect among other critics. And of course, I don't have this specific experience as this was adapted from a graphic novel about what it is like to grow up as a Chinese American person. But a lot of it is about being the only kind of person that looks like you in your general area when you're growing up.
Yeah.
I'm from Vancouver. I don't know if you've been a lot. There's not a whole lot of black people there. So I had like, I kind of echoed that experience that he had, and that sort of fish out of water experience kind of comes in and out of vogue when how much people are willing to bite on that sort of that complaint that some of us have.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's done really well, and it shows a lot of different variations that come from feeling like you're not represented or you don't identify with people that look like you. There's one scene where, without giving away too much, he's, you know, become kind of the poster child of anti-racism at his school, and he just wants to fit in. And he kind of goes up and does a little bit of a Uncle Tom-ish thing where he says, like, I don't, like, everything is cool. Don't make me the face of racism. I just want to fit in. And, like, you kind of dislike him a little bit for it, but you also have to identify how hard it is.
You get why he's doing it.
So yeah, just in a wider scope, and there's so much more to be mined from this, but like mm-hmm. I like the honesty of that kind of representation and that kind of story that they were telling.
Yeah, I watched the first episode, Nico, and watching Jin kind of navigate very uncomfortably, being like on the precipice of being accepted by a bunch of people, and only to feel kind of set back by the presence of a new, like the arrival of a new person, was really striking to me because like these are like really hard emotions to access. And I just want to know what you made of the first episode.
I mean, I liked it. I knew nothing. It was one of those things where it's like, oh, this is in my like, this is on my list of things to watch, yeah. and I don't know much about it, and I'm going in not knowing anything about it. And I really like a thing where after I watched the first episode, and I was like, oh, I want to watch more of this, and I know this is based on a book. Well, I got to find this book. I want to read more. I want to I want to immerse myself in this because I do think it does a lot, and I think it's really hard to do that YA thing of this is what it feels like to be a kid in school,
yeah.
you know, and like this is what it feels like to, you know, like to feel to try to fit in and to do what you need to do to fit in, and sort of like the compromises you make morally when you're younger when you're trying to do these things. Like I think it really captures a lot of that tone really well.
Cassie, you're a comedian, you're a TV writer, you're also Chinese. What parts of this series hit with you so far?
I think it was such a well-written show. I think there's so many nuanced components to it. I already identify with, like, just the fact that you're introducing me as a Chinese comedian, it's already making me defensive, and I think that's what, like, that character's struggling
like,
with
like
as
Jin.
Well.
Yeah.
Yes, that he's like, I don't want to be defined by being Chinese, and the, like, push and pull of accepting your heritage, and also being a second-gen kid, it actually is a mix of those cultures, right? Like he is actually rejecting a version of his heritage that does not actually belong to him, and he has to find his way to figuring out what parts he identifies with, what parts resonate with him, what he can feel comfortable in representing and not representing.
Yeah.
I think those themes, especially in a kids show, I think they're so nuanced, so like difficult to explain even as adults. Like I have trouble communicating these ideas, and the way that he deals with, you know, subtle racism and the real politics of having to fit in the community that you operate in, having a shot at making the soccer team versus, you know, speaking up for something that you idealistically hold. Those are real exchanges that I personally didn't learn how to deal with until well into my late 20s, well into my professional career. Yeah. You don't, growing up, especially in not your dominant culture, you don't know. Like nobody tells you. Nobody's like, hey, by the way, this is a thing you're going to have to deal with. Other people have motives and they're not going to tell you what they're about and you're going to have to deal through it. It's just, I think in a show like this that's targeted towards such a young audience, I think it's so difficult and praiseworthy to be able to write a script that so clearly lays out what the moral ambiguities are and that there's no actual villains. Like this is not a superhero movie of like there's good guys and bad guys.
Yeah.
And also like on what Jackson was saying about the Spider-Man movie, I think this show does such a good job of explaining to you what the parental struggles are, what the family dynamics are between the kids, but not only that, between the child and the parent, but between the two parents themselves and what their struggle is in fitting into their work environment. There's full scenes in this show that just follow the parents' trajectory, which normally in YA movies, the ones that I grew up in, you always identify with the kids so readily because you're like some parent is just grounding them.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, obviously they don't understand me. But in this show, you're forced to watch it and be like, well, these parents are doing their best and they're struggling against very real things that they don't have control over either.
Yeah.
And you have to empathize with their side of the story as well. It makes that YA like coming of age story so much more nuanced.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was going to say like we seem to be, I think, in a moment that has so much in terms of riches of exploring these dynamics, particularly in Asian diaspora shows. So we're talking about Everything Everywhere All at Once. There was Beef on Netflix. There was Exo Kitty, which is also on Netflix. Mm-hmm. How do you think this show fits in on that spectrum?
I don't like to think of it this way because I like to think that Asian story, well, just of any kind of representation, but obviously I have a personal stake in Asian story. I like that they would just exist on their own without comparison to other Asian stories. I think it does a disservice to these stories.
Do you think the comparison is because of the timing, like because they're all kind of coming out together?
And similar actors too.
Well, this is the thing. I don't Michelle like Yeo's that they use them, you know? A lot of the same actors. I feel I like see. We love to talk about diversity and representation on screen. And for a long time, right after the Crazy Rich Asians wave, everyone was like, oh, Asian actors are popping up all over movies. And you're like, no, Awkwafina is popping up all over movies. We have a lot of representation for Awkwafina. Right now, we love Michelle Yeoh. And of course, she's wonderful, but she's been in movies for ages. Mm-hmm. What I love is that they're cast young kids in these movies that have no prior big blockbusters or anything, and we're giving lots of screen time to great actors that we haven't seen or heard of before, who are representing a wide range of the human spectrum, not just that they're Asian kids.
I love that thought. And also, I just I love that we've been speaking about a bunch of live action adaptations, because speaking of those, there's a pretty significant one coming this summer that I just wanted to talk to you guys about. Take a listen to this.
Since the beginning of time, since the first little girl ever existed, there have been dolls. But the dolls were always and forever baby dolls. Until...
That's from one of the many, and I mean many, many teaser trailers of the live-action version of Barbie. It stars Margot Robbie, Ryan Gosling, Simu Liu, and Issa Rae. You recognize the music, right? That's an ode to 2001: A Space Odyssey. Since each of the trailers come out, it's kind of given us little hints on what this movie's about, but we don't really know yet. Like, we're still kind of early on. The movie comes out in late July. It's directed by Greta Gerwig, whom I love. Margot Robbie, it stars as Barbie. I just want to ask each of you where you think this movie's going to go. Nico, what do you want to see out of a Greta Gerwig Barbie?
I mean, I kind of want to see. I like there's the moment in the one one of the latest trailers where they're all dancing, and then she says, "Do you guys ever think about dying?" Because I like, I like pink nihilism, and I'm hoping that we get more of that, because I do think, like, I say that, and that's a joke, but also I do think it's really hard to do something that's like hyper femme and also has that nihilistic edge, and I really like marrying both those things together. It also seems to be like this meta commentary on this sort of exactly, you know, what we're talking about. Spider-Verse, and we're also talking about a Barbie movie, and they're the same thing, right? We're taking these products and we're making a movie out of them. It happens all the time. We're seeing a lot of these. Remember, they made a Battleship movie like 20 years ago. You know, they do
this
thing.
Oh, we remember.
Thing. Oh, yeah. You're wearing a Battleship the movie t-shirt people can't see.
Hashtag never forget. Jackson, what do you want to see out of the Barbie movie?
I mean, I don't know if you... My favorite spoof, reboot, remake, whatever you want to call it, that I've seen is actually the Brady Bunch movie in the 90s. I think that's kind of what we're seeing here, because that one, it's like took the, you know, prototypical 70s family values Brady Bunch, and then it rebooted them, but like in the 90s. And the 90s, you know, very nihilistic, very like anti whatever the Brady Bunch are showing.
Sure.
And they both kind of operated as criticisms of each other. That really kind of seems what Barbie is going to be going for. I think it's going to be critiquing both, you know, the unrealistic beauty standards that Barbie might have helped to promote, and also, you know, just materialism, commercialism of Barbie. But also, I think maybe they'll critique whatever our dominant cultural trends are. I'm hoping that's what we get. Ryan Gosling's had a few interviews already that seem very wild, his passion for playing Ken. But also, I think I'm hoping it's going to criticize, or I think what it's going to try to do is make Barbie relevant again. I don't know if you know, like a couple years ago, there's a huge lawsuit between Barbie and Bratz to like argue over which one is the dominant doll for our modern age. I think that we're going to get a little bit of that in this too. And you know, I'm so on board. This and Oppenheimer coming out the same day. I'm going to watch both.
There's an incredible GQ profile of Ryan Gosling that came out this week. And in one of the quotes that are amazing from it, Ryan Gosling says, you know, I was walking by and I saw Ken in the backyard face down next to a squished lemon, because no one ever cares about Ken. And I just thought, someone needs to tell his story. And I'm so excited. That's the most incredible thing I've ever heard in my
Justice
life.
Justice for Ken.
Cassie, finally. Last word to you. Where do you want to see Greta Gerwig take the Barbie movie?
I'm excited for this movie to be funny. I think for movies that are so wide audience and like sponsored and that have like toy content behind them, there's so much censorship that normally happens when you're making movies like this.
Yeah.
And I'm excited for it to just be so funny. I think watching the trailers, that's probably where it's headed.
Yes.
Which like nobody can believe. Every actor was like, the script is amazing and it'll never see the light of day because it's written to be so insane.
Yeah.
But I think Mattel is one of those companies that would embrace going subversive and trusting comedians to make the movie that would be the best movie rather than aligning on what their own censorship guidelines are.
Well, you know what? We're going to have you guys back on when the Barbie movie actually comes out. Okay, before I let each of you go, I need you to just recommend something for me to watch, something for me to read, something for me to, I don't know, just calm the anxiety of my soul. Nico, why don't you start?
Well... It's Pride Month.
Yes.
It is Pride Month.
It's Pride Month.
The last thing I wrote for Autostraddle, a website that I'm no longer a writer at, I reviewed a movie called Monica. It stars Trace Lissette. It's a trans narrative that does a really fun thing that I really enjoy, which is it never explains the transness. And if you're trans, you get it. Like, there's parts in it that I pick up. I'm like, oh, yeah, I've done. Like, there's a scene where she shoots estrogen. And I'm like, I've done that before. Mm. But it never explains why or when or how she's doing it. I'm like, oh, I like this. I like that a trans character gets to exist and never has to say that she's trans. Mm. And you can stream it. It's on Amazon Prime. I wrote a review of it on autostraddle.com. And Monica, you should watch it.
Lovely. Cassie, what about you? What do you want to recommend?
I wish I had something really like eloquent and and classy to recommend, but I was watching the Ryan Reynolds movie Free Guy. It's about video games.
Let's go.
Yes. It's so good. I cried. It has all the things you want. It's got action. It's got love. It's got lawsuits. It's got video games. It's
I don't want
jokes.
Anything else. That
it's
sounds fantastic.
The best. I watched it twice this week. It was great.
You watched Free Guy twice this
I
week?
I did.
Cassie, are you okay? That, I love that. I'm absolutely going to watch Free Guy this weekend. I'm in. Jackson, last word to you, my good man.
I'm going to actually up your anxiety instead of reduce it.
Oh, great. That's what I was looking for.
One of my favorite books came out years ago. It's called Everything Matters! By Ron Curry Jr.
Oof, with an exclamation mark.
With an exclamation mark. Okay. It's about this guy, and in infancy, the first chapter, there's this disembodied voice, never gets explained, speaking to him, tells him he's the most, or like third most intelligent person ever to be born, and he is going to tell him his name, and it also tells him in exactly 36 years, 5 months, 4 weeks, 3 days, 6 hours, and 36 seconds, a meteor will strike Earth, killing all life on Earth, and you have to decide, does anything you do actually matter? And the book goes from there, and it's so,
I'm so
dark,
anxious already,
funny,
Jackson.
But it's so good. I've reread it like 2 or 3 times already, and whenever I'm feeling down, for whatever reason, this makes me feel a little bit better.
Okay, you know what? Thank you for that recommendation. I'm willing to put myself through a lot for you guys. I really appreciate it. Jackson Weaver is a senior writer with CBC Entertainment. Cassie Cow is a comedian and TV writer. And Nico Stratus, the anxiety shark herself, is a culture writer at Spin and many other places. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, before we go, I just want to play you something that we heard this week at Commotion. On Wednesday, all these actors came together at the Hollywood Reporters Raising Our Voices event. It's this event that focuses on Hollywood's diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts. And one of the speakers is Taika Waititi. Of course, you might know him as a director of Thor Ragnarok or Jojo Rabbit, What We Do in the Shadows. Here's Taika talking about what needs to change in Hollywood.
Stop asking us what to do, how to fix things, all right? I'm so tired of this, the diversity conversation, inclusivity conversation, all the conversations. All of us want to be working and not having to come and do panels and speeches in the middle of our day. This is a great thing. It's good that we're talking about it. We have to keep talking about it. But this is the you got us doing. You wonder why there's no indigenous stuff out there? This is the shit you got us doing. All right? Making us come and talk about the problem and tell you how to fix it. You fucking broke it. You fix it. Ask us what to do.
It's like someone coming into your house, stealing all your shit and burning your house down and then saying, okay, we need to have a talk about this. And then saying, now, you're going to rebuild your house, me, and what can we give you to help you rebuild your house that we burnt down? You build the fucking house, you burnt it down, and I'll come back and hopefully you get it right. And if you don't get it right, then we'll try again. You know, Succession, one of my favorite shows, is a diverse show because it's just white people. Yeah, I never see that anymore. I'm like, great. I want to see, like, what? Yeah, I hate this. It's great. I love this. Rich white people. I don't want to see other people from every other culture in this show. It works because it's that. You can have a white show, great, but have other shows as well, not just those ones.
That is Taika Waititi with a really emotional but also really funny speech talking about the problem of asking people of color to constantly participate in how to fix diversity problems, because sometimes that is not the thing that they need to be asked to do. They just need to be asked to make the shows that they want to make. He was speaking at the Hollywood Reporter's Raising Our Voices luncheon this week. That is a commotion for today. But before I go, I just want to say a quick thank you to everyone who works on the show. Commotion is produced by Stuart Berman, Ty Callender, Danielle Grogan, Dean Kim, Jess Lowe. Our digital producer this week is Kelsey Muhammad. Our director is Jane Vancouverden. The show's engineer is Sam Hashmi. Don Perry is our senior producer. Anne McKeegan is our executive producer. Our intern is Trish Laparik. My name is Elamine Abdul Mahmoud, and you know what? I hope you have a fantastic day.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.